Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by Gold Boys. Coming up on the show, Kev O'Neill from the Odds Breakers will join us. We'll talk a little NFL, some college football as we head to the All-Star break. The All-Star break is here. So we will start with some baseball, get to some football in a little bit. But baseball is the story as the Yankees and the Orioles played a showdown series. Talked about it before the weekend. Yankees needed to get on track. The Orioles needed to get on track. And the Yankees, you can look at it two ways. They were three outs away from getting a sweep. They were an out away from getting a sweep. Really should have won the game after Kimbrel walks a couple guys. Orioles are up 3-2 in the ninth. Kimbrel walks a couple guys and Ben Rice hits a three-run homer. You figure Yanks are going to sweep. They're going to take first place as both these teams took the field with the winner heading into the All-Star break in first place in a tie. Different amount of games, but the winner of this game was going to be in first place, and the winner of that game ends up being Baltimore. Yankees played terrible defense in the last inning. Volpe, Verdugo, you name it. So just a gut-wrenching loss, a painful loss for the Yankees, just starting to look like the team of the first few months, and then they lose a game like that. All in all, not a bad weekend. All in all, you would have taken two out of three, you know, Friday at 7 o'clock Eastern before the game started. You say, hey, I'll give you two out of three right now. You would have signed for it. You hadn't played well against Baltimore, hadn't played well at all. You went in there and Cole looked like Cole. Heel pitched well. Rodon was not good. He only gave up two runs, but he only went four innings through a million pitches. He's out of there after 100 pitches, four innings. But all in all, a pretty good series. Could have been a great series. It leaves a bad, bitter taste in your mouth if you're a Yankee fan. Really felt like you should have walked away, not only with all three, but put Baltimore in a position where they're reeling, where they have a bunch of questions. But I think big picture, this is a long race now where, you know, both these teams have shown warts. Both these teams need things. Yankees need certainly some help in the bullpen. Both these teams have issue in terms of a closer. Yankees definitely need a bat. Yankees really need like three players. They probably need one bat and two relievers, or two bats and one reliever. They need, they'll probably just roll with the starting pitching and hope you can get enough out of Cole, Heel, Cortez, and then just piece together the rest. Remember, Clark Schmidt will come back here pretty soon, they hope. And it sounds like Stanton, not right away from the All-Star break, but maybe a week or two into the All-Star break, will come in and give some protection to Judge, be back in the lineup. That will help. But the Yankees need things. The Orioles need things. The Orioles have a bigger war chest in terms of prospects from being bad all these years to trade. So keep that in mind. If it's a bidding war, it's going to be hard to outbid the Orioles if it comes to, you know, these big ticket items like a Crochet or a Mason Miller, which I don't think the Yankees are going to be shopping for. That's not their nature anymore. They don't do that. They like to, you know, they like to show you how smart they are. They like to get these little guys on the margins, the Frankie Montas, the Efros. You know, a couple years ago, they didn't get Soto. They get Benintendi. They like these little guys on the margins. You know, they think they're the Rays or the Royals. They like to play money ball where, you know, they think they want to show you how smart they are. And we don't need to spend the money. And we're going to be, you know, frugal and we're still going to win. Well, it doesn't work because they're not as smart as they think they are. But those are the kind of moves they go for. So I wouldn't expect a big splash. But if it did come to that where, hey, you're trying to get a Crochet or a Mason Miller from the A's, the reliever, the closer that throws 103 miles an hour, Baltimore can outbid you. So keep that in mind. I probably should have mentioned them sooner. Boston is only four back in the loss column of first place. I still don't think they're going to win it, but hell, I wouldn't have thought they're going to be 11 games over 500 going into the All-Star break. Cora is a tremendous manager. Devers is a great player. They get enough pitch. I mean, they've got good pitching. They get enough around Devers. The pitching coach Bailey's done a tremendous job with guys like Hawk and Crawford. They have done a tremendous stuff. They've overachieved probably more than anybody in the league. Royals right up there, and they did beat the Royals two out of three after losing to Cole Reagans on Friday night. They win the next two. They beat up Lugo. They hold on Sunday. So 11 games over 500 and only four back in the loss column. Only two back in the loss column of the Yankees. 3.5 overall. There's some game discrepancies here where the Yankees have played 98 games and the Red Sox have only played 95. So that's a factor, but just a remarkable job by the Red Sox. Remarkable job to be 11 games over 500. Just really great managing in a team where the fans don't have much expectations. They don't spend money like they used to. That's another team that's gotten really cheap the last few years. And they have overcome all that. And they are playing tremendous baseball as we head into the break. I'll get to the All-Star game and the Derby. Just around baseball here quickly. Cleveland with a 5-game lead and going into the break on Minnesota. Minnesota has really tightened that up. Minnesota did lose on Sunday to the Giants, but I would put the Guardians and the Brewers in the same kind of bucket where they're just, you feel like you look up and you feel like they've been up 8-10 games the whole first half of the season. You look up and, like I said, Cleveland's only up 5. Milwaukee is only up 4 in the loss column on St. Louis. They haven't played well recently, so things to keep an eye on there. Philly's still up 8 on Atlanta. Philly's in good shape. Seattle and Houston tied in the loss column. Seattle, I don't trust. Seattle has a couple of bad losses to the Angels. You don't trust them. Texas lingering here, only four back in the loss column. Texas, who was an under-discussed World Series champion. You know, nobody really acknowledges last year. It's kind of fluky. They played Arizona. Nobody expected them to win last year. Nobody talks about them this year. They look up, and they're still four games under, but they're only four out in the loss in Seattle against Seattle. So that is something to keep an eye on. Dodgers with a six-game lead in the West. Their pitching is awful. They lost a couple of awful games against the Tigers this weekend. You don't figure Arizona or any of these teams could push them, but if they had a second team that was really good in that division, they could be pushed because, like I talked about on Friday, all of their pitching is hurt. They have no starting pitching whatsoever right now, but they should still get enough of these guys back and have enough in the lineup to get home in the West. But only a six-game lead in the loss column. You would think, hey, that team's going to run and hide and win the division by 15, 20 games, which they might have if they were healthy for sure, but they're not healthy, and they've had some bad losses, rough pitching. Derby on Monday, All-Star game on Tuesday. I don't get too involved with the Derby. Derby is just, it's batting practice. I know the rules are different. Everyone gets 40 pitches, and then you get to the semis, and everyone gets 27 pitches, so it's more of a level playing field where in past years it was a clock, and some guys were allowed to get more swings because you're supposed to wait for the ball to land. And when you were playing catch up, they didn't really enforce the rules because it's home run derby. Nobody cared. But look, if you were betting it, people cared. And that was a situation where, you know, players were able to just get extra swings and kind of play catch up and really bend the rules, break the rules, and do that to catch up. And that's going to be taken out of it now. Everyone's got the same number of pitches. You're going to need to trust your pitcher. The pitcher is going to be a big part of this handicap. Alonso's the short shot at 3-1. A guy I would look for, Jose Ramirez at 13-1. Great power. He's only been in this once before. He didn't have a good showing, but he was dealing with a hand injury, a wrist injury. So he's made some comments about wanting to get back on track. I was doing a show with Ben Wilson today, and he made all of these points too. So I always like to look down on the board for these events just because it's random. It's high variance. Jose Ramirez, 13-1 at DraftKings. Shop around. See if you can get a better number, but 13-1, it's the second longest shot on the board. Alonso plus 340, Azuna 4-1, Witt plus 475, Garcia and Henderson are 5-1, Hernandez is plus 950. I don't feel like it's some great bet, but if you want just a little action, I could see Jose Ramirez winning, and that's at least a number worth looking at. The All-Star game is one thing I like to bet. I always like betting the under. It is at 8 now. I'm starting to see some 7.5s pop up. This has gone under 8, I think 13 out of the last 16 years. This is a game dominated by pitcher. You always hear the cliche, and it's a cliche for a reason because it's true. Good pitching beats good hitting. And you have pitchers coming out in this game. And by the way, Skeens is going to start. We talked about that the other day, and that will be good theater. And this is why the All-Star game is good. This is why it's the only All-Star game worth watching. It's actual competition. You'll get Skeens against probably – I mean, we don't have the lineups yet, but probably some combination of Gunnar Henderson, Juan Soto, and Aaron Judge against Skeens. That's great baseball. I don't care if it counts or not. That's going to be fun to watch. I wish they would wear their team's uniforms. It's more aesthetically pleasing. It was better for, you know, it's just, you get a sense of the history of the game and the uniforms, and you see the Dodger uniform with the Yankee uniform and the Red Sox uniform and the Braves, and it blends beautifully. They have these stupid, asinine American League, National League uniforms, which I can't stand, but getting back to my point here, I like the under. Good pitching beats good hitting. You have pitchers come in, used to throw in 6 or 7 innings. They can just throw for an inning as hard as they can. They know they're only going one inning. They throw their 15 pitches, and they're very effective because they can just kind of empty the tank. They don't have to pace themselves. Plus, there's an unfamiliarity aspect where, like, you know, Aaron Judge doesn't face Paul Skeens a lot, and the unfamiliarity favors the pitcher because it's hard to hit a pitcher you haven't seen. You don't pick up the ball. You don't pick up the spin. This whole environment favors the under. Doesn't mean it's going to go under. I mean, we haven't had an over since 2018, so maybe we're kind of due for one, but this is a game that is typically dominated by pitchers. I will look to the under and a small play on Jose Ramirez to win the home run derby. As we head into the All-Star break, the Yankees just with a dreadful, dreadful loss, but a pretty good weekend overall. So we're looking at a good second half of some of these races. You know, the Mets in the mix somehow to make a run for the playoffs. Bad loss on Sunday. You'd hope to beat the Rockies and, you know, go up 500 after just a disastrous start to the season. To be 500 at the All-Star break would have been a borderline miracle. They're going to be 3 games over. You live with it. We'll see what they do as we are. Look, AL West will be a good race, possibly a 3-team race. AL East, a good race between the Yankees and the Orioles. And I guess you got to throw the Red Sox in there. AL Central, Cleveland coming back to the pack. NL Central, Brewers coming back to the pack. And then, you know, Braves, Phillies, and then the Dodgers in the West. We'll see if those races manifest at all. I'm skeptical they will, but it looked like we weren't going to get many pennant races. I don't know, a month or so ago, some of these races have shaped up to be in a position where maybe you get some drama here. We're going to get some drama in the second half. Maybe you get some drama in the divisions. You're going to get some drama in the wild card. And All-Star breaks a little later this year. Usually it's like the All-Star game's like the 11th or the 12th. It's going to be, let's see, the 16th is on Tuesday. And they don't play, nobody plays until Friday. So you're off the 17th, you're off the 18th, you're back Friday the 19th. The deadline's, I think, the 30th or the 31st. They moved it up or down a day, but it's usually July 31st. So you only have 12 days. It's not like you come back from the All-Star game and you got like 2 or 3 weeks to decide, hey, what direction am I going? You have less than 2 weeks by the time you get back from the All-Star break to decide some of these teams that are on the fence, the Mets, the Giants, there's a million of them in the National League, the Pirates, you throw the Red Sox in there, will the Red Sox be buyers? I wouldn't think they would be sellers with this record, but it's going to come up pretty quickly, the trade deadline. And once the trade deadline comes and gets here, you're talking about the Hall of Fame game right behind it with the football preseason starting. And then, you know, we're on our way with NFL preseason back, college football around the corner. So fun time ahead, a little bit. These are the dog days, the All-Star game, the All-Star weekend, you know, that Monday to the Friday, that's probably the slowest time of the year in terms of sports, but a you know, good time to catch up on other things, watch TV shows, watch, you know, movies, whatever you're going to be doing. Because if you're into sports every day, all year round, this is the one time where you can kind of catch your breath and there's nothing major going on. So we will talk a little more football, some college football, some NFL with Kev O'Neill. That is next. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. And he is back. Kev O'Neill, first time back. I think Selection Sunday might have been the last time. I know I hopped on yours once. But Kev, welcome back. Appreciate you coming on, man. How's it going?
Oh, thank you. Great, man. Got just as we were talking a few minutes ago, got my vacations over with, man. I'm digging in. I kind of got my NFL done first. You know, I think that's important. NFL, you get the information. There's less change. So I'm like, I want to get a good grasp on that so I can beat the line moves on that. But then college is a work in progress, and it's always going to be a work in progress, I think. But I think I got a beat on some good teams with some of the studying I've been doing.
What is your process? Take us through it. You can be as detailed as you want. What is your process for getting ready for a football season? Where do you start and what do you do?
So, you know, I used to dive into college immediately and NFL right when returning productions ratings came out. But the transfer portal has really changed so much that I decided then I'm just going to focus on the NFL first because I can beat some line moves on the NFL. For example, I got Ravens under 11.5 and I got Ravens over 10.5. You know, it's just you get these lines early. And the reason you can start the NFL is just you know what the changes are. The free agency moves have been made by the draft. As soon as this schedule comes out, you know where all the quirks are, you know. The NFL, you got to look at history, coaches' history, you know, how the team's done, obviously, over the past few years. Was last year an outlier year? You look at that. But what's funny is the articles that I released at the Odds Breakers kind of, you know, breaks down in summary what you need to know. Now you can go a lot deeper dives, but you look at what the market thinks first with the win totals out there. You look at their Pythagorean wins. I think, you know, that's a big step. I will put a big Pythagorean win total article at the Odds Breakers out that shows what they should have done. For example, the Seahawks won 9 games, but their Pythagorean win total was 7.35. You know, you got to see what they should have done based upon how many points they scored. You look at their key losses, their key additions, and their draft picks, seeing what holes they're filled. Look at each position group, seeing if they got better, worse, stayed the same. You have to analyze that, assign ratings. And then you obviously look at the quirks in the schedule, but I have a couple different processes because once your power ratings are done, you can figure out their probabilities of winning each game. You know, for example, if they are a like 3-point favorite, you know, they're going to have a 59% probability of winning the game, right? You add all those probabilities together and you get a win total like that too. So I make some comparisons, but you know, I used to look at that as the standard, but the truth is with the NFL these days and the added games, you know, good teams are going to take some weeks off. And I think you really got to look into the schedule. So that's my NFL process. And when it comes to college, it's a little different. I wait for some of the ratings books to come out. Well, magazines, Phil Steele, obviously, Lindy's, Athlon, I use all three. You know, reading up at beat writers. Now, beat writers will always hype teams up. It's rare that you're going to see a beat writer down because they wouldn't be a beat writer. But you got to kind of understand what they're coming, where they're coming from, and and what you think the team actually is, but you look for continuity. Obviously, you look for, just like I said, with the NFL, coaching success is even bigger when it comes to college football, returning production and where their holes are, how much the team is coming back, what their schedule looks like. I think schedule is going to play a much bigger play. And I think with all these transfers, I do have on three ratings that I like to use, net ratings rather than gross ratings like in 24/7. But I think the transfer portal, you don't know, just because the team got a bunch of good transfers, it doesn't mean they're going to gel together. So I think there's more variance in the college. So my number of bets went down in college, but I think you can take some long shots as well. And we'll be talking about that, Will.
Sure. We'll start NFL teams. What bets would you still recommend? What teams you just think are generally overrated, underrated? Take it whichever direction you want to go.
You know, what's really interesting, and I'm against a lot of people in some of this, but the Cincinnati Bengals, I didn't think they were doing that good with Burrow. And if you look at Burrow's QBR, it's only 20th before he got injured. You know, they started out rough. They lost their offensive coordinator. They lost their stud running back, Joe Mixon. And I'll tell you, every time Joe Mixon got the ball multiple times, that usually was a win for the Bengals. That kind of change I do not like. Joe Burrow's got a big contract. Now they're actually going to have to cut, obviously, production like Joe Mixon and other players that they lost. I think that they're a little bit overrated. I would still take under 10.5 wins in a heartbeat on Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the schedule and everyone has such a tough schedule in the AFC, and they don't, where they have an advantage where they get to play the Raiders, I think the Giants, the Commanders, and their last play schedule gives them Panthers, Titans, Patriots. So, wow, those are six pretty easy games. And who knows, Steelers may be an average team. But, I mean, it's built into the line. That's what I'm afraid of, where, man, asking 11 wins is a lot in the NFL. 11 wins is a hell of a lot in the NFL. And that opened, like, for the division, plus 180, plus 170. That was a good bet. Now we're down, like, plus 140, plus 145. So that's a case where I think if you're going to bet the over, you can bet them to win the division, you probably missed the boat, where now the schedule and everything is probably priced into the market correctly. And their defense did not play well last year. I think they'll bounce back, but I agree. Getting to 11 is tough.
It's the toughest division in the NFL, you know, and I know the Steelers have the toughest schedule and we've beat them to death. I got them under 8.5 at a great price, you know. But the truth is that with Cincinnati, it's just a situation where the quarterback showed weakness last year. I don't know why he showed weakness, but they lost Brian Callahan, the offensive coordinator, their cornerback Awuzie, Jonah Williams, one of their key tackles, defensive tackle DJ Reader. You know, Tyler Boyd's been there forever and he was their slot receiver. But hey, don't we also have another receiver that's a little bit disgruntled there in T. Higgins? What the hell's going to happen with him? I don't know. Just a lot of losses, you know. And you're right. You know, you get ahead of these things early, you probably got a better number on them. The division's going to be hard and Cleveland's also looking pretty good.
How about an underrated team?
Okay, underrated. You know, what's funny about underrated is I bet a lot of NFL totals under. So the truth is that if they're underrated, there's not a ton of them. And I didn't bet them, I don't think yet, but the Cardinals might be a little sneaky.
I like that one.
Yeah, we talked about that a few weeks ago on my show at the Icebreakers. But, you know, I really like Marvin Harrison Jr. and Gannon. You know, they're kind of flying under the radar themselves. And you look at schedule, they also got a fourth place schedule coming in. You can't forget that Kyler Murray, you know, the problems that he has throwing the ball. I mean, he's still a stud athlete, you know, and he's won games by himself multiple times. So it's kind of those under the radar teams. I'll even give another one that I didn't bet the win total on, but I put a little bit to make the playoffs is, believe it or not, the Jacksonville Jaguars. You know, nobody's talking about them now just because they had that rough season. Well, a lot of times you don't like players after they got paid that money. Well, maybe that's what was on Trevor Lawrence's mind, you know, the future. And he kind of seems like that kind of kid that maybe the money's not going to affect him as much. I'll tell you this. I really like Brian Thomas, that receiver they drafted from LSU. You know, I think that kid is a stud. And they got some other guys to cover up some defensive issues that they had. They got Eric Armstead as a defensive end, Gabe Davis also as wide receiver, Darnell Savage as a safety, Mitch Morse as a center is coming in, Duvernay, couple other guys, Ronald Darby. You know, I think that Jacksonville could be a little bit sneaky. Nobody's talking about them this year. And you got to remember, they have a Super Bowl winning coach over there in Peterson.
Yeah, and you and I have talked about this before. You know, I'm on record for a long time now. I'm not a Lawrence fan. I always thought he was overrated. I never bought this idea. It was generational. I would not. I understand why they paid him. It's tough when you have one of these fringe quarterbacks because it's easy to say, hey, don't pay him, but who you're replacing him with? I just, man, a lot of fumbles, very loose with the ball. I'm not a fan of Lawrence. I don't think he's ever going to live up to this generational. But now, look, average quarterback, slightly above average quarterback, maybe. But I just don't buy this idea that he's a generational player. Now, look, to get to 9 wins, you don't have to be, and that's a soft division. But I'm always leery of Lawrence. I just think he was a lot of.
Well, Houston, everyone's talking about Houston, you know, and there could literally be a sophomore slump because Houston is going from a fourth place schedule to a first place schedule, and guess what? Last year, everybody's like, oh, it's Houston. You know, as a team, you almost kind of think it's your week to kind of let down a little bit, to relax a little bit. Well, that's not going to happen this year. Every team's going to be ready for Houston. They're going to see the kind of money that these players got paid to go to Houston. So, I mean, the NFL, it corrects itself pretty quickly. So that's one team. I will say that the Raiders was a little underrated, and I did take them over their 6.5 win total. You know, Antonio Pierce really made a statement with this team last year, and I was somewhat impressed. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to win the division, and I know Jim Harbaugh sneaks in there too, and that's going to be a rougher division in itself, but they, you know, really showed that they can stop teams. And how do you not love their pass rush that they did last year? It's just been with Crosby. That guy is just a machine out there. And the truth is that Aiden O'Connell wasn't great, and I'm not sure if the mustache or him's going to start, but at least you have experience kind of coming in here. You know, you got all these teams with new quarterbacks this year. At large schedule, I could see them possibly winning at home versus Miami. At Jacksonville is going to be a little tricky because I just mentioned that, but I'm working with 6.5 wins here. I think that they can get to 7. Their Pythag says they should have won more games. I think over 6.5 is still good on the Raiders.
Yeah, and I always have concerns when an interim comes in, especially when everyone hates the guy that got fired, and you get a little bump. That's naturally get a bump. It's easy to get suckered by that bump. Oh, this guy's our guy. We'll see with Pierce. He did get that defense playing well. That's the one thing I think is legitimate, where he did get that defense playing well the last, whatever, 6-8 weeks of the season. I don't know that I would have committed to him. Where are you with the Jets?
So me and you took the Jets at a good number. I think it was about plus 250 to win the division, plus 240, something like that. I'm still with it. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, he's a little bit annoying with how he acted last year. And I mean, but you got to look at he's a top five quarterback in history of football. I mean, you look at how long guys like Tom Brady played, right? I mean, he should be able to walk into this massively talented team and make a big splash. I mean, the Jets have a good schedule this year, right? The Patriots are so down this year. They're predicted to be the worst team in the whole league. If you look at the favorites that have the least amount of wins, the New England Patriots are right there. But I'm still high on the Jets to win the division. I think Buffalo took a step back on defense, and now that Josh Allen's making that money, you know, they have no proven wide receivers there anymore. They got rid of their two guys. You know, I mean, we'll see what Keon Coleman is. He sure didn't run a great 40 time. He kind of hurt himself a little bit in the combine. But I mean, the Jets are absolutely loaded at large versus Denver versus Minnesota at a neutral stadium. So, you know, the AFC gets the shaft this year because they get the extra away game instead of the extra home game. But Minnesota's a neutral game and at Pittsburgh. I think that's a very manageable schedule for the Jets.
No, I totally agree. And if you told me right now, hey, the Jets are the one seed and they have the best team, look, pound for pound, to win 7 games with the quarterback situation they had last year, I mean, they didn't have one quarterback last year that played for them that's going to throw a pass in the NFL this year. Probably when you look at Simeon and Zach Wilson and Boyle, and now you're going to, even if Rodgers plays like the 8th or 10th best quarterback with that team around him, and there's whispers now maybe Davante Adams isn't happy, he could join the team. Team's just absolutely loaded. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
And the Buccaneers, real quick, I just want to say nobody's talking about the Buccaneers enough. Now their division wins crept to plus 300. I mean, I don't think you can forget about the Bucks. They're the ones with the continuity at quarterback now, at their wide receiver positions, at the coach, right? They have the continuity there. Atlanta doesn't. Atlanta's got a new team. We'll see if Cousin comes out from his injury, and he probably should, and he's a really good quarterback and a great addition. But like Raheem Morris has failed before, I believe, at the Tampa Bay Bucks. So just when it comes to underrated, I didn't bet them yet, but I would not be shocked if Baker Mayfield makes it in this weakest division in the NFL.
Yeah, and I don't know what to make of the NFC South. Anyone that's been betting football for a long time, two of the parties that disappoint you the most when you have expectations, Kirk Cousins and the Atlanta Falcons. Now that they're going to join forces, I don't know. I mean, they have the most talent. The market thinks they have the most talent. I agree with that. They have a good team around them, good offensive line, good skill guys. I don't know, man. He's older. He's coming off an injury. And I know you can say the same about Rodgers. I don't know. Just something about Cousins married with the Falcons. I'm a Vikings fan, and he was going to the Vikings, and he was supposed to be the missing piece, the guy that gets them over the hill. They were in the NFC Championship game. He's a 4-point favorite. Before they got Cousins, they had Cousins. He's supposed to be the guy, and they went backwards. They won one playoff game his whole time there. Not that it was all his fault, but I don't know. Something about him just leaves me a little empty.
100%. Yeah, maybe I'm still bitter too, because I had plus 185 for them to just even make the playoffs, which switched to juice by the time the season started, and they couldn't even limp it into that. They're very dink and dunk last year. Is that going to change now with the new offensive coordinator? I don't know. We'll see, man. But the first year is always a little tough, and the Falcons have the high expectations. So I'm still turning my head towards the Bucks in that division.
You hinted at it. Who's the worst team in the league? Who has the number one pick next April or May or whatever?
Probably the Patriots, but if I had to make a bet on the worst team, I'd take the Titans at 8-1. The Titans are a mess, and I think, you know, getting rid of Vrabel was a huge mistake on their end. I don't like the new hire. Their division got better, you know, that's for sure. And who knows what the Colts would have been towards the end of the season if Anthony Richardson played the whole game or whole year. So I think that they have it pretty rough. And it wouldn't shock me if Will Levis, who I think is one of the most overrated guys, I didn't like him coming out of Kentucky. When he dropped to the second round, I wasn't shocked at all. I think he possibly loses his job for Mason Rudolph, believe it or not. Mason Rudolph actually had a pretty good year at the end of the year for the Steelers, you know. I don't think the Titans are good at all. They lost Derrick Henry. Their offensive line's always been a mess. They're trying to fix it. But this is literally feels like a rebuild year for them. 8-1, I possibly would look at it. I didn't take it yet. I'm going to shop around a little bit. But it's either the Patriots or the Titans. I actually believe the Carolina Panthers will be a little bit better than they were last year.
All right, how about college? You told me before you just finished, I think, your Big Ten preview, so you could take it Big Ten. You could take it any direction you want. What's at the top of your mind? What's your favorite bet right now in college football?
God, you know, I made a few in the Big Ten, and it's a long podcast because I had a lot to cover, and it'll probably come up Tuesday morning. So if you want to listen to that, just check it out over at the Oddsbreakers. But what did you think about James Madison, Will? And I'm asking you this. Let's just say James Madison the last 2 years, how good they were. What if they played like in Iowa or Wisconsin or Mississippi State? I mean, let's just even say UCLA or something. Wouldn't you think that they had a pretty good shot of possibly winning those games the last 2 years?
Sure.
Well, James Madison just became Indiana. You know, and I think that is going to be so huge for the Hoosiers this year. And you got Kirk Cignetti is the coach. They brought him in from James Madison, and he brought in 15 new transfers to start. Like, he brought the whole James Madison team basically with him, but he brought their best players. A lot of them were underclassmen, transfer seniors type situation. It was a perfect situation. And they kept some of the best players that they had, like Donovan McCulley, you know? I mean, this was the worst team in the Big Ten last year, but I've never seen a team go through so many upgrades that I've seen in this situation. One of the biggest teams I've upgraded in my power ratings, I only got them to a few points above average, which is still a massive leap. But you're looking at a win total of 5.5 flat at some books. They just got to make a bowl game. Schedule-wise, not terrible. Their only guaranteed losses are at Ohio State. There's no Oregon There's no Penn State on their schedule, which is great. They get to play a Michigan team that's in a completely rebuild situation. It's almost like they went with production over top-end possible talent with a low floor or high ceiling by bringing these guys in. Curtis Rourke is going to be their starter from Ohio. He was the second best quarterback in the MAC, and maybe if you put some guys around him, he's going to win. He's won some bets for me too. You know, you got to think of Indiana now as more of a what James Madison was the last few years. And believe it or not, man, after Penn State, Ohio State, and Oregon, if Penn State and Oregon or one of those teams loses the quarterback, has a slip up, it can open up any of these other teams that has the super easy schedule, right? So super easy schedule. I like them over 5.5, man. I think they're going to go over 5.5. And if you want to sprinkle them just to win the Big Ten so you can hedge out of it when they play Ohio State or something, 200-1. Wow. I mean, there's a lot of meat on the bone in that. So I'm looking at them as an improved James Madison team coming into the Big Ten.
I was going to ask you. I was like, no, he's not going to say sprinkle on the Big Ten because it's such a ridiculous number. That's 200-1. What book has 200-1? I don't have these college football futures in Connecticut for some stupid.
Unfortunately, I know we rail on Connecticut as they deserve to be railed on multiple times. DraftKings has it at 200-1. Yeah, I think it's 290-1 actually on FanDuel, which I took. That's the one I took. It's 290-1 on FanDuel. Is a little sprinkle, like, you know, beer money, whatever. 12-pack of beer, throw it on there. It's going to end up being you know, 212 packs of beer if they get there and win, but you'll be hedging out of it and laying -1,000 on Ohio State or something. So you can still make 10 units or 100 units pretty easily.
Or hoping Indiana gets a lead and you can do something live, or just, hey, hope it comes down to one game and you go for it. But look, at 201, 291, why not? How about a team on the other end, a team you're down on, or let me ask it this way. Are you a believer in Ohio State as like the clear cut favorite? Do you have concerns about the quarterback? I'm not a huge Will Howard guy, but take it whatever direction you want to go.
Funny, I just kind of said it like that when I did my Big Ten preview. Will Howard doesn't feel like an Ohio State quarterback. He's a stud, though, for what he's done. He's not like a C.J. Stroud or Fields or somebody that can really, really make it happen. He just feels like a good Badger quarterback you've seen in the days like that would get him to 10 wins. Maybe there's more upside now. He's playing with a bunch of 4- and 5-star kids, but I actually still have Ohio State in my top three. Georgia is my number one team. You know, it's between, believe it or not, Oregon's probably four. It's Texas and Ohio State. I'm shuffling around a little bit right now, just getting into the Big 12. But no, I think Ohio State is properly rated, to be honest with you. I think it's their year or bust. They've been so embarrassed, and now they got Jim Harbaugh out of there. Ohio State's got an easier schedule. They got to win at Oregon to be nice, or Penn State, right? I mean, I believe Penn State gets Ohio State at home. So that's two tough away games, but, you know, the schedule's pretty easy on the other side of it. It's Ryan's day's year, you know. I mean, people have been calling for his head a little bit just because he didn't win the national championship. I mean, that's the expectation. Chip Kelly comes in from UCLA as their offensive coordinator, which I find super interesting. I believe Ryan Day was under Chip Kelly at some point. Quinshon Judkins comes from Ole Miss, a good running back who I think might be better than Travion Henderson, their other running back. But, you know, they still have studs all over the field. Great returning production for an Ohio State team. I don't have many questions on them. But if you want to look for a team that is overrated, believe it or not, I'm going to go against what everybody's been saying on podcasts. I'm going to go against Oklahoma State a little bit. I had them 40-1 last year, and I felt like the luckiest person that I got to hedge out of that when they played Texas, and they got blown out. If that was a game you're hoping to live hedge out of it, you had no chance. Like, I had to lay like -600 or something to hedge out of from the preflop, and I'm glad I did because I had a lot of meat on the bone at 40-1. But I believe that was super lucky because they were 70th in EPA. 70th, you know, that is not a team that competes for a championship game. I thought they lucked out in many situations and just got teams when they were sleeping. Gundy is just such a much better coach when he's under the radar. You put expectations on Gundy like this. I mean, I'm looking at these magazines and they have Oklahoma State as the number one team in the Big 12. I laugh at that, man. I am not. I'll be fading Oklahoma State. I think they are completely overrated, and I think NC State might be a little overrated too in the ACC because Grayson McCall at Coastal Carolina is a little bit different coming to NC State. He's been injured his last 2 years, and there's no Jamie Chadwell. No Jamie Chadwell, man. That was his guy. You know, I think everything could change for him. So definitely, I think Oklahoma State is going to be my overrated. NC State is number two.
Last one, and anything for Heisman. I feel like, and I've talked about this a lot with you, with MVP, with Heisman, they've gotten a little smarter here. They've taken a lot of fun out of these numbers. You don't get these massive long shots that are super live. I know Duggan 100-1 a couple years ago actually almost got home, but for the most part, a lot of these numbers are pretty short. That being said, is anything worth a bet? If you had to bet, like if you had a $100 free bet to use in this market, who would you use it on?
God, man, that's a tough one. And I agree with everything you said earlier on our show a few weeks back. It's you're not going to get these big numbers on guys that you should be getting big numbers on. I mean, when Noah Fifita is 40-1 from Arizona, you're kind of like, what? That dude
Right.
should be 200-1.
Yep. Great point.
I haven't bet it. Jackson Dart's been such a popular one that he's all the way down to 14-1. I mean, you got the offensive schemes with Dylan Gabriel at Oregon at 8-1 and Carson Beck at Georgia, of course, at 8-1. Maybe you just take Carson Beck because they're going to be the playoff team in the SEC. And just, but I don't think the odds are correct on any of these. And I suppose if I had to take a shot, Drew Allar is interesting at 45-1, and I'll tell you why. He's got a brand new offense coordinator from Kansas named Andy Kotanicki, and he
Very
was
good.
under Lance Leipold for all these years at Kansas. Maybe he completely changes this Penn State offense is what they need, and maybe Drew Allar becomes a stud quarterback, and Penn State has the schedule. They're minus 140 to make the playoffs. They have a very easy schedule. Easier than Ohio State's. Their only tough game really is against Ohio State. No Oregon, no Michigan. Ohio State at home, no Iowa. Very easy non-conference. The West Virginia game's a little tricky. Their first one, I'm going to watch that a little bit. Maybe hope they lose, then you can bet them to make the playoffs. But I think that Drew Allar is just a long shot, not long enough though at 45-1, but that would be my play.
Kev, you're the best man. I appreciate some time. Thanks for coming on. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Yeah, check us out at theoddsbreakers.com. If you happen to be in Vegas over contest sign up weekend at the Circa, I'll be podcasting for the Circa the 22nd of August through the 24th. So check us out at Radio Row. I'll obviously be lurking around the Circa and other places. Please come see me and have a beer with me if you have a chance.
Are you signing autographs, pictures, autographs, things like that?
If people even recognize me, sure.
Kev, you're the best, man. Appreciate a few minutes. We'll do this again soon, I'm sure.
Have a good one. Thanks for being on.
All right. Thanks to Kev O'Neill. That'll do it for today. We will be back Wednesday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you Wednesday.